This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
I wish I knew how to quit you.
Is butter a crumb?
I had a hunch you might be a real romantic.
We were decoys. He used us as bait. We procured for him.
We could have had a good life together. Fuck it, we were good life. But you didn't want it, Ennis. So what we got now, you broke that mouth.
You are listening to Outtakes, the home of queer cinema on Joy 94.9, where this evening we are pulling up our socks and heading back to school and celebrating films which look at young love.
Celebrating or reminiscing?
A bit of both.
You couldn't stop the chatter just as you were hitting the microphone. Ellen and I, in the background.
Did that take you back to school too?
I don't want to go back there. I'm so glad that's a world away.
But what a great bunch of films that we're looking at this evening, celebrating young love. And we're looking at these films because there's a new film that's just opened up around the country.
First Girl I Loved.
That's right. Yeah. So this is the new film from Kerem Sanger. Now, this is a divisive film, but it's a film that we've decided to spotlight anyway because it really does take us back to, you know, one of those moments that so many films have sought to capture.
That's right, Daniel. Many, many films deal about high school love, first love, puppy love, unrequited love.
These queer first love stories, there are few of them, and that's why we wanted to spotlight this against one that probably Alan and I really enjoyed a little bit more. What was that film?
Would that be Edge of 17, Gina?
Quite possibly.
Did that take us back to the 80s?
It did take us back, especially
what
the soundtrack.
To our days of Ute.
I love that film. Gorgeous. But no, we'll be catching up with Dylan Galula later in the program. Dylan is the star of this new film, The First Girl I Love. So we'll be chatting with her about the film and about the genre more broadly. But before we do...
That's right, Daniel. Not only are we talking about queer films in this genre, but there are so many good films dealing with young love and puppy love or first love.
First love, teenage love.
And we want to know from you what you... think is the best film
there
about young love. Sorry, I was just thinking about what I would say there, and I got caught up there, Daniel. Sorry,
we're all getting caught up with memories of our first loves.
We want to hear from our Joyces what their favourite young love film is.
That's right. Message in on 0427 Joy 949 or email us at onair@joy.org.au. Let us know what your favourite film to deal with young love is, or the most authentic film to deal with young love. Or, I don't know, this is a conversation that I think we're going to be having throughout the evening.
Yeah.
What makes a film that deals with young love good? Is it authenticity? Is it campness? Mm. Because there are so many films that kind of spotlight young love in a really camp, kind of facetious and playful way. And they're really fun. Mm. And then there are these other films that deal with
the loss of innocence
in a really kind of gritty way. Mm. One film, of course, to do that is this film.
My love, there's only you in my life, the only thing that's right.
Oh, would we call this a quirky, upbeat kind of film?
I don't think so. This was a very controversial film. Endless Love, the 1981 film from Franco Zeffirelli.
Don't know that one. Is it Ice Castles?
it's the film Endless Love.
Endless
now,
Love?
Can we just say, Franco Zeffirelli...
You just threw me off there, Daniel.
There you go.
You already said Endless Love. I thought you just threw me a curveball.
So this is an example of a film that deals with this genre of young love a really kind of gritty...
Melodramatic
way. And in fact, the film copped a lot of flack for actually being too conventional. See, the film is based on a 1979 book by Scott Spencer, which is a kind of centres on this kind of obsessive man who follows this underage girl in a really kind of sinister way. And the film, let's face it, it's a really endearing love story. I mean, I really like this film.
Endless
what else
love.
You got for
Endless
us?
Love.
Endless Love.
Well, turning then to a film that kind of deals with this genre in a way that's far more camp.
I'm not Josie Grossi anymore.
Oh, I love this.
I really love this film.
Never
Isn't it
Been
fun?
Kissed. It is one of the best romantic, I'd call it a romantic comedy that sets itself back in high school with Drew Barrymore where
yeah,
she was
yeah.
the real dag in high school and That's for right. an undercover story has to go back.
Yeah.
It's actually one of, it's a brilliant screenplay. I recommend all new time writers actually sit down and read this screenplay. It does flashback so
doesn't it?
Well,
it stars Drew Barrymore, David yep. Arquette, and Michael Vartan. Mm-hmm. Drew Barrymore plays the reporter, as you were saying, Gina, who's 25, mm. and she's tasked with going back to high school. She has this makeover, and she has to kind of fit in again.
Yeah.
And what she kind of stumbles across is first love, mm-hmm. because she has, as the title suggests, never been kissed.
Yep.
And this is all about her kind of losing her innocence, but you're right.
It's a do-over film.
It is a do-over with a very inappropriate teacher-student relationship
that's
builds.
That's right. Yeah.
Highly inappropriate, but it's kind of made out to be a sweet, because officially her age is older, but it's so wrong. But kind
so
of
right.
But this is kind of fun. And I love the flashbacks, Gina, as you were saying. And yeah. there's that one scene which I think is one of the best scenes in cinema. Like, I can't over, you know, over
I give
the
it
scene.
As a...
The yeah. scene where she kind of has this flashback to prom night and she's going on prom with the kind of hottest guy in her class, who then kind of shows up with another girl and throws eggs at her. It's this remarkable, heart-wrenching scene. My God,
to the
poor Drew Barrymore. If that doesn't take you back to high school.
It's one of my favourite Drew movies.
It is,
I can watch it time and time again. Thanks, Daniel.
Oh,
okay, it's a real flashback.
Speaking of films that do take us back to high school and centre on kind of puppy love in high school, but films that are also really, really camp, how about this?
You know what? You're not the only one who thinks that, Daniel. We've got a message in from Lorraine who says the best young love movie is Grease. So much fun. We have to agree with you.
And we have had another message in from Jamie.
Jamie says, I love the young love in High School Musical. Jamais.
Well, there you go. Something about the musical genre as well. Mm-hmm. Because apart from, of course, Grease and High School Musical, there's this that you might remember.
Just think of all the time I've been losing. Finding the right thing to say.
Things will be going my way after today.
She looked right through me, and who could blame her? I need a.
So this is the 1995. Now I think Camp Farce, a goofy movie from Disney.
You've got
to get a little bit
Disney.
Of Disney in.
Sorry, Daniel. You're,
oh, we didn't
you're,
get
you're
to
on your own.
This audience.
You're on your own there.
So look, so many films. Yeah, do message in and let us know what your favourite high school young love film is.
And you can message us in on 0427 JOY949 or you can email us on air at joy.com. joy.org.au.
One of my favourites, and I'm just going to jump in here, is actually a really positive lesbian film, which is The Incredible True Adventures of Two Girls in Love, which is a teenage romance film with a happy ending.
Well, that's right. That.
Are there such a thing?
Yes, I made you watch this when we kicked out Daniel one day and we did all the same films.
It's
remember?
A good one. Yeah, it was good.
So, look, there are so many amazing queer films to deal with the idea of young love. Whether or not they have happy endings is something that we'll come to when we look at First Girl I Loved, which we're going to do in a moment. But, you know, we can't let this kind of celebration of all things young love go without kind of nodding our heads to, I think, the most archetypal film of all time to deal with young love. That's a big claim.
Very big. Better be good. What do you got?
...1997, Baz Luhrmann wows the world with this version of William Shakespeare's Romeo and Juliet. Oh. And it is a classic.
Oh, I thought it was Strictly Ballroom there for a second.
Yeah.
I can't tell.
We've just survived that debate with this audience. But I love how when we were talking about Franco Zeffirelli, Alan and I grew up with Romeo and Juliet, Franco Zeffirelli version in high school.
Well, that's why I thought you'd appreciate The Endless Love, which Endless Love?
I thought, you know, I could swear that film, that song comes from a film, a really cheesy 80s film called Ice Castles. But I might be mistaken. Well, someone out there, please save me. Message in.
mistaken. No, look, clearly this is a big genre. Mm. This is a big genre that we're dealing with over the course of the next hour. So many films to deal with young love and to spotlight young love, whether in a really kind of gritty way or whether in a camp kind of farcical way. Both of these kind of ways of approaching the genre are really good. And we'll be looking at some queer examples of films that deal with young love in this kind of gritty way and in this kind of camp way. To take us through to our look at queer films dealing with young love, you're listening to Outtakes on Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9 in Melbourne. joy.org.au for the world.
So was I supposed to do anything for this? I've never been interviewed before, so.
It's really easy. Okay. Question one. How old are you?
18? Yeah.
You're a senior?
Yep.
Do you have a boyfriend?
You are listening to Outtakes on Joy 94.9. That was a clip from The First Girl I Loved, the new film from Karim Sanger, starring Dylan Galula and Brianna Hildebrand, and it's screening around the country now.
It is actually an audience award winner. It won Audience Choice at the Sundance Film Festival in 2016. We are a little bit divided on this film. And I remember we got to review it separately, but I had friends who went and saw this at one of the screenings. And, you know, older female audience that, you know, came out of the cinema and said, oh, my God, yet another depressing lesbian film. And I was like, oh, when I watched it, I thought, hang on, no, it doesn't sit in that kind of bucket of films. This is a coming-of-age story. It is a story about young love.
Right. So the film follows two teenage girls, nerdy yearbook editor Anne and softball star Sasha, who both kind of wrestle with their sexuality as they kind of progress through high school. And it kind of takes us on their journey as they embark on this, is it a relationship, isn't it a relationship kind of an affair. Mm.
And I think we have to say it's very now. It is set in today's time, today's technology, today's socio-political climate.
You say that because the film deals with technology and kind of mediates the affair through technology.
Yeah, which does really well. Can I just say, favourite part of the film was how the friendship turns into a relationship over the course of a lot of texts, which start off as, you know, two friends kind of texting each other saying, hi, can, you know, keep me entertained, entertain me, to something that happens in the bedroom via text.
Here's what I think about this film.
I thought that was done well.
Sexting.
Sorry.
Sexting. I think that's cool.
Yeah, it kind of went there.
I have had a number of conversations about this film, and I think it's great that we're getting queer representation dealing with all facets of queer life, particularly this kind of coming of age narrative. But as we've kind of established already this evening, this is a broad genre. Mm. We do have a lot of films, queer and not queer films, that deal with coming of age and that deal with young love. So it's a really rich genre. And I think when you're making a film to kind of fit in this genre, you have to be bringing something new to the game. Mm. You have to be upping the game. Does this film do either of those things? In my humble opinion, I don't think so. And I know that's a controversial position to take. I know it is, but I think I'm getting really passionate about it because I've had a number of chats about this film with people mm-hmm. who have said to me, it's great that we're seeing lesbian representation. Mm. I think compared to other lesbian films, which perhaps aren't so good, this film is good, and therefore we should kind of praise it. And I sit there thinking, well, no, as queer audiences, we deserve strong films that stand on their own and aren't strong because other films to deal with queer themes are perhaps subpar. Mm-hmm. You know, it doesn't stand to say, well, this is better than other films, so therefore it's good. The fact is, this film, it's incoherent at times. It's
I disagree. I strongly disagree, and all three of us felt very differently about it.
Well,
so it's a non-linear story,
yeah.
And it's not obvious at all times. And I kind of, okay, it's probably not the most flashiest kind of way in which it tells its story, and there are parts of it, like when they bring the cameo in with Cameron Esposito, I was kind of like, why are you doing that? Is she a producer? I know she's a comedian, I know she's popular in media, but why bring her in? She doesn't add to this story. Mm-hmm. But in the way they've kind of flashed back and forth from telling parts of the story does change, keep evolving.
But you see,
and it evolves with a different audience.
We were chatting about this before, and those flashbacks center on really insignificant plot beats.
But do they?
Well, I think they do.
I think it keeps changing the story as, so you think you've seen something, then you see a little bit more, and then you see a little bit more, and your definition changes of what you thought that moment meant. Yes,
and
Alan?
That's the problem with this film. It is confusing. It is. And look, and I am not resting on my claims of dementia here. What I'm saying here is that I think the film is confusing in that sense, because at times you actually don't know that it is a flashback. You actually think that it is a linear.
I like that.
Yeah. So
I really enjoyed that aspect of the storytelling.
But for me, I didn't understand. Like, at times I actually thought, was that a genuine flashback, or was that a fantasy flashback? Mm. Is that a true going back in time, or is this my reimagining? And that's what I found confusing.
I tend to agree with Alan on that. But my other issue with the film, and I know I'm being harsh, but I think that's because I'm passionate about this film. It's, you know, I'm thrilled that it's showing around the country. I think that's so important. But I do think the way this story is told is, and excuse the harsh term, juvenile. If we compare it to a film like Barash, which screened at MQFF earlier this year and has done the film festival circuit, Barash is an Israeli film that deals with a very similar plot. Mm. Barash is about a young girl who kind of gets used by this other girl in her high school, and through that process comes to learn about her own sexuality. Mm-hmm. Barash is a cool film. Barash is a very now gorgeous film. Mm-hmm. It's timely, it's edgy, it's risque, it's confronting, and it has this kind of nuanced political dimension that this film just doesn't have.
Hang on. I think the thing is, in Barash, you have a character there who is very worldly, who has actually gone through that coming out process. And that's a different story.
I think
here in The First Girl I Loved, we've got two people who are very confused, which is a very genuine teenage state to be in. So we've got these two very confused girls trying to come to terms with their sexuality. Yeah. So in that sense, it's difficult to compare.
It's two worlds.
It's difficult to compare these two. It's apples and oranges.
And I think agreeing with Alan there, it's also two very different audiences. Mm. Barash is able to kind of break through and reach a more adult audience. I think this is for a much younger teenage audience. And I think those of this age going through teenage angst, I would have loved this if I was that age.
And don't get me wrong, I think this kind of representation is really important.
Yeah.
So I think it's fantastic that we are finally having films about queer life and young queer life, which has sometimes been a really taboo area of representation. Mm-hmm. I think it's fantastic that we finally have representation in these spheres, but I want more. Yeah. So I want to...
Oh, look, we all want more.
I want to come back to this.
But we can't look at it at such a harsh lens. Yeah, I think we've been very...
Well, I'm going to kick that soapbox from out underneath you, Daniel. Oh, kick that away. I think we can all agree that... You know, it could have been done better.
But it's got us talking, hasn't it?
It has. And this film is a conversation starter.
There you go.
So I sat down with Dylan Galula, who plays Anne, the main character in this film. I did ask her about the audience, Gina. So listen out for those for Dylan's thoughts
now,
on the audience.
Don't forget, she's the actress, not the writer, director or producer.
Well, that's
so
true.
Yes, I'd like to know her.
Are you already backtracking, Gina? But, of course, I started the interview by asking Dylan to outline what this film is actually about.
It's about a teenage girl who's in love for the first time. That sounds very simple, but it's kind of a simple story.
It does sound simple, but actually it gets quite complicated and quite messy as the film progresses, doesn't it?
Sure, as it does when you're 17 and you have a crush on somebody.
We do see a lot of films about first love, particularly set in high school. But what do you think it is that makes high school and first love so fertile for filmic adaptation?
That's a great question. I don't know. I mean, probably because we have a culture that fetishizes youth and nobody wants to see adults do anything. Because I think adult love is just as weird and messy. I'm saying that like I've ever experienced it, and like I'm not in my early 20s. Yeah, I don't know. It's probably mostly just like a gross answer like that is the truth.
We do see some films dealing with older representation, but it's not something we see a lot of.
Yeah, I guess the truth is like actresses kind of expire at 30 because of that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I certainly hope that's not the case. But, you know, for whatever reason, we do see, you know, a lot of films set in high school dealing with love. Do you think it's something about innocence as well? Sometimes when you're older and you embark on a relationship, you kind of have some expectation of what you're getting in for. But, you know, first love, and this is a film about first love, you kind of are entirely innocent, aren't you?
That makes a lot of sense, yeah. And you're really just totally desire with no history. You're not bringing anything to it. You're just like, I want to kiss this person, not like, what is it like when you kiss? You're completely correct, yes.
And there's probably something about experiencing love for the first time as well, that kind of sense of novelty, I think, that kind of heightens the feelings.
I think so. I think you're right, and especially because your world is so small and it's so confined to your high school. It really amplifies all your feelings.
That's right. It's like a pressure cooker.
Yes.
The film is, you know, a love story, but it's so much more than a love story. Obviously, it deals with a number of really meaty themes. And I wonder if that's something you thought a lot about before kind of taking on the role.
For an actor, that's the good stuff.
Yes.
I mean, I've obviously talked a lot about this with Karam. I don't know. You're probably specifically talking about how he touches on issues of consent and kind of sexual assault. And it's like, if you're telling an honest story of a 17-year-old girl, that scene is in there, you know?
Really?
I mean, I think the numbers would support that. You know, like if one in two or one in three women are sexually assaulted, probably your female character has happened to them.
Wow. So in that sense, it's really quite an important component of this story.
I think so. I think Anne feels alone in general, but then has this additional trauma where she both can't tell anybody about it and she loses her best friend because her best friend's the one who assaulted her. It's awful. And I think really contributes to her the isolation that she's feeling.
Yes, but then, of course, the other thing that contributes to the isolation she's feeling is the same-sex attraction component of the love that this film chronicles.
Exactly, yeah. That's so what I mean. Like, that's not enough.
Yeah.
It's terrible.
Right. So the film really does then deal with isolation.
Yeah, she's a lonely person.
Clearly, the emotions that are involved in this story are intense. How do you prepare yourself for a role like that?
I don't know. I think it's like when it's really well written, a lot of that work is done for you. I think some actors have a very clear, defined process. Mine is really messy, and I just I just trick myself into feeling like it's really happening. So it doesn't really require that much preparation. And this character is so real on the page that I knew who she was.
The film is resonating with audiences around the world. What do you think it is about the film that is resonating with audiences so much?
I haven't seen a lot of movies that paint teenage girls as three-dimensional people. Like, I don't think our culture in real life talks about teenage girls like they're people. So I think it's really exciting to see that. Like, a lot of men come up to me and they're like, I'm obviously not a 17-year-old gay girl, but I really related. And it's like, that's what women have had to do forever. Like, we have had no choice but to be like, I guess I'm, like, holding Caulfield or whatever. You know what I mean? So that's really exciting to me, that every character in this movie is a real person.
But, you know, it's interesting hearing you saying that. I mean, I think you're absolutely right. Picking up on what you said earlier about the fact that, you know, we don't see older love stories either. We don't often see, as you were just saying, teenage girls represented as three-dimensional characters. We don't see older women represented as three-dimensional characters. That doesn't say very much about representation of women on screen, does it?
It does not. I'm definitely not the first person to make that point.
No.
As a consumer, I feel like the stories that aren't about white guys who are stand-up comedians or some whatever, like, they're just so much richer and so much more interesting to me.
Yeah.
I just want to see things made by people who aren't white and straight and male. It's going to make film so much better the more that happens.
Why is it important that we see stories of young love that chronicle same-sex love?
Well, I think it goes back to what we were saying about young people not having a personal model for what they're going through. Like, they're experiencing everything for the first time. I think models of universal experiences in movies and TV really inform real life. And it just adds to the isolation, the more heteronormative the stories they're seeing are.
Coming back then to this idea of young love and seeing young love on the screen, I wonder if for you growing up there were any kind of films that particularly resonated with you that kind of told these stories of young love?
I don't know. I don't have a good answer for that because I don't think I sought out anything alternative. So I think I just watched what every girl of my generation watched. Like, I watched, like, The Princess Diaries, and I was like, you know, that boy's cute. I don't know. Like, I just like the idea of, like, nerdy girls being made over into pretty girls.
Yeah.
Like, I don't have a progressive answer for you.
Oh, no, that's totally okay. Your answer doesn't need to be progressive. Princess Diaries is a great choice. I think a lot of people listening will probably agree.
I think that's just the unfortunate truth.
You know, romance films have come a long way from the 90s, but there is still something to be said about these films that we grew up with. Yes, they're kind of trashy, but, you know, they're a bit of fun.
Oh, of course, absolutely. But they're definitely not. Like, to me, First Girl I Loved is a great movie. To me, it's not a teen movie. It's just a very well-made movie. People always say that about the movie they're in, but, like, I really, really, really think that.
You're my best friend, and I'm really worried that you're gonna think differently of me. I like somebody or whatever.
Oh, yeah?
All of a sudden, my heart's just like, oh my God, I'm so scared. Why? I don't know, what if I say the wrong thing?
Should we do it like they do in Europe?
How do they do it in Europe?
Oh.
Wait, let me try again.
That was our chat with Dylan Galula, the star of the new film from Karim Senga, First Girl I Loved. It's showing around the country. Now you're listening to Outtakes on Joy 94.9.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
You are listening to Outtakes, the home of queer cinema on Joy 94.9, where this evening we are heading back to school and turning our attention to films that spotlight young love. We are particularly looking at the new film screening around the country, First Girl I Loved from Karim Senga. And that was our chat with Dylan Galula, the star of this new film. And I mean, you can really tell, we were chatting before about the film, and it's a divisive film.
And I know she did say that she thinks it's for a broader audience, but I know the adult characters in this film, from the teachers to the parents, are caricatures. Mm. I could not relate to them.
They're two-dimensional.
Yeah. And they're of my age. They're of my vintage. Alan, I don't know if you found the same, but I could not relate to the adult characters.
Totally agree with that. But yeah. Having said that, I did find that the main protagonist, Anne, I really identified with her. I thought that
she's captivating.
Her thoughts and feelings and her journey, I think most people would identify with, regardless of their age.
They will sympathise. They will definitely follow
the protagonist. There's a young, moody teenage girl in all of us.
Oh, I would. No, I think there's a real vulnerability.
You and me,
to
Daniel,
it.
Definitely snap.
Oh, okay. To be a bit kind, we have to follow her on this journey. Yeah. It really is a coming of age
and it's
story.
It is a coming of age story, absolutely. And the ending kind of cements that this is a coming of age.
Yeah.
story without giving too much away. Mm. I feel like it does deal with first love, though, in perhaps a quite a conventional way. And, you know, it is part of this broader genre that we have now of films to kind of deal with coming of age and coming out, set against this kind of broader paradigm of young love.
Mm. I was about to say, I wouldn't find this film as conventional. I think it is quite, it is definitely unconventional because we do have a lesbian romance or first love experience on screen. So that's unconventional really by itself. And also this ploy or this filmmaker's technique that they used at the flashbacks, I think that was unconventional. It didn't work, but it was not conventional.
Can I just say, the problem with this film starts with the title. It should be The First Girl That I Loved or The First Girl Who I Loved.
Hang on, Daniel. There's more nits over here that you can pick off me. Yeah, just reach over the panel and you can just pick them off.
Right, so
moving on.
We are looking at films that celebrate young love, and I think the reason why, particularly why I'm being harsh on this film, is because we're lucky in that we're starting to cultivate a really rich genre of a really rich body of queer films to deal with this subject matter. And in fact, it's something that we looked at a few weeks ago when we spoke to John Butler, the director of Handsome Devil. And Handsome Devil screened again around the country, which is fantastic, a couple of months ago now.
Yeah.
But, you know, it is a conversation that we visited then. You know, why are filmmakers constantly turning back to this period? Why has it proved to be such a fertile period for the minds of filmmakers? And this is what John had to say.
I think young people, their minds are at their kind of widest aperture, you know, when they're young. So that is a period in your life that will never be replicated in terms of intensity. You know, art and music and film and romantic relationships and friendships and family, all of that is experienced with such vividness. Like, it can almost physically hurt you to look at a painting when you're young. And then you can return to the gallery 30 years later and it barely does anything for you.
Yeah.
I just think, and that's why I think it is such a creative area or point in life to explore for any artist. I just don't think we'll ever tire of figuring out what it's like to come of age, you know, because we've all been young. And if I can quote one of the characters in my own film, everyone who has ever been young knows exactly what humiliation feels like. You know, we feel with such intensity when we're kids. And I think that's something that should be respected by adults who have forgotten that.
What an eloquent fellow. And I think he kind of hits the nail on the head.
For sure. Mm-hmm. When he's talking about that sense of intensity of the emotions that you felt at that time, I think we're all sitting here nodding our head. I mean, that's just a universal truth.
And that's the thing. When you are wanting to reach a broad audience, you tell a universal story and everyone knows. You know, talk about writing what you know. We all know that humiliation. We all know what it was like to be ill-equipped with our hearts that are just like exploding out of our chest for somebody that we've fallen for.
Carrying
to not
torches,
have that come back.
Heart on our sleeve.
Exactly. Throw on that for us. And this is where the queer aspect is a little bit more difficult because we're still at that same time trying to figure out our identity and trying to fit in.
We were having a chat before, Gina, about exactly that. I made the observation to you that so many of these films, and there are a lot, they all end in a really unhappy way.
Mm. Yeah.
And that's something that stuck out to me because the, if I can call them heterosexual counterparts, the films which deal with young love in a heterosexual way or heteronormative way, they sometimes end in heartbreak, but they don't always.
No.
So films like Grease and The Notebook and High School Musical and, you know, these are films that really celebrate the, you know, the wonderful potential of young love.
Yeah.
And the queer counterparts don't do that as often. And I wondered why that is.
Go ahead.
I think sometimes they do. I think Point in Case is a beautiful thing.
Mm.
And, you know, I think this is one of those films about young love that has got universal appeal in the gay audience. I know that when we recapped on this a little while ago, it got poo-pooed by our guest. But
it's a little bit outdated, I think.
It's a little bit outdated, but I think sometimes too when you're looking at these young love films, it's about nostalgia, it's about that do-over. And I know a lot of us in our teenage years at high school didn't have that opportunity to really explore young love as a teenager at high school. high school, and to have these films come back and revisit it and actually have that love requited, it's almost a sense of...
There's an element of catharsis.
It is an element of catharsis. It's like, oh, right, it didn't happen for me, but at least it happened for somebody. Yeah. You know, it's a beautiful thing.
Yeah. I see what you did there, Alan.
Pun intended.
And beautiful, I think one film that really captures the spirit of exactly what you're speaking about is Edge of 17,
yeah.
A 1998 film that kind of takes us back to 1984 in Ohio. It's directed by David Morton, written by Todd Stevens, and it's actually autobiographical.
Todd's does come out.
Goddamn soundtrack.
Oh my god, like, amazing. So In the Name of Love, Thompson Twins, that's one example of, you know, how right this film, this soundtrack is. Amazing.
That's not an 80s standard.
Yeah, we're going to help Daniel out here.
Daniel, when it comes down for us, comes down for that one.
This is my favourite song in the soundtrack.
One of the best ones is the opening one. Hey, Mickey, you're so pretty, you're so fine. Hey, Mickey.
That's true.
That set the tone for the film.
So I think Alan and I were sitting there reminiscing because they were playing everything from Bronski Beat to Eurythmics, a bit of Annie Lennox, definitely Flock of Seagulls, you know, anything that was kind of playing those songs that we were dancing to in clubs. I mean, it was a brilliant. One of my favourite songs, So Many Men, So Little Time. I mean, it is such... I think I remember listening to that in the Peel at some point in the 80s.
What are you talking about, Daniel? Same for you.
This lesbian rock to that song. Like, it was just an amazing soundtrack. What I forgot, I think I saw this film a very long time ago, but... Big Boo from Orange Is the New Black is Angie in this film, like the fairy godmother to the main character. She plays a brilliant character.
She holds up the plate of beans at the beginning of the film.
So it's a fun film.
Yeah, definitely a fun film. But the funny thing is, this is the second time I've seen this film. I watched it when it first came out years ago, which is a very long time ago now, nearly 20 years. It came out in 1998.
Yeah, 20 years.
And so for me to watch it, you know, decades later, I have a different experience with this. I actually found it a little bit sad and a bit poignant because I think because this was semi-autobiographical and it really did tell the story of what it was like for a young gay man to come out in the scene and how at that, you know, particularly at that time, it may even still be the same now where, you know, you're almost like the, you know, you're the young, naive, you're easy prey.
Fresh mate.
And you get exploited. And so I think, you know, part of this is that nostalgia. What I found here is it's like, oh, you know, some of those things where you see Eric being exploited, it really did resonate with me. And I kind of thought, oh, wow, there is a bit of an undertone here of that sense of pain, really. But it's still uplifting at the end. So, I mean, you've got that reality, that realism, but yet still tempered with a fantastic soundtrack to lift you up.
Joy 94.9 in Melbourne. joy.org.au for the world.
You are listening to Outtakes, the home of queer cinema on Joy 94.9, where this evening we are celebrating films that revel in young love. And it really is such a rich, broad genre. Mm.
And, you know, we want to hear from our audience what film they think is the best film that represents young love. And you know what? We've actually heard from John from Broadbeach, from the Gold Coast. Must be listening online. So, yay.
Thank you, John.
Gold Coast, Queensland. Way to go. And John mentions Andy Hardy. And I'm thinking, and then he wrote back to us straight away and said, ignore Andy Hardy. So we're ignoring Andy Hardy, but we'd like you to message back and tell us why we should ignore it. But, you know, having said that, we want to hear from everybody else. What is your favourite young love film?
Message in on 0427JOY949 or email us at onair@joy.org.au.
And that's the thing. I was saying earlier, my favourite is The Incredible True Adventures of Two Girls in Love, which is a 1995 lesbian film, really upbeat, really positive. Mm. Now, The First Girl I Loved is a very different film. And I think it is for, you know, when I was the age of the audience that should be watching The First Girl I Loved, I fell in love with The Adventures of you know, it was a 1995 film. I was 16, 17 at the time. I think 16 and 17-year-olds, young people will watch The First Girl I Loved and love it and get so much out of it because it tells many stories. I think young men need to watch this film, but I won't say why. I don't want to give too much of the film away. And that's where the age of 17 is very different. And that's the thing, Alan, you and I watching this again from a time that we walked into this world. We saw that that's world right. with those eyes.
Yeah.
And to watch it again is really, like, it's a much slower film, but my goodness, at the time it was such an important
film. It was. And you know, I think this is it. When you watch these films, this is why these films are constantly being made, because there are people at different stages in their life that love going back and revisiting that time. Now, some of these films actually are specifically, you know, they're made today but set in a different time frame. At East of, you know, Edge of 17 is not one of those. And then, of course, we've got other films which are very much now about the dynamic and about the cultural context that we're in now.
See, what I love about these films is, and I think John Butler, the director of Handsome Devil, really did hit the nail on the head here, is that these films take us to a time where our imaginations are at their widest apertures, in his words. Mm. And the reason I think camp films are so successful at taking us back to this time is because they're so playful. Mm-hmm. And I think you need to be playful when you're kind of being exported back. There is a place for kind of this kind of earnest storytelling that we see in films like The First Girl That I Loved. And
you're not letting go on that. No.
And I think there's a real place for that when it's done well. But I feel like the camp films that take us back to high school, films like Edge of 17, films like Never Being Kissed, I feel like they're so fun, and I think it's hard to go past these films.
But that's where I would classify those films more as romance, teenage romance films than coming-of-age films.
Mm-hmm. Well, they're not coming-of-age
films. And they're not coming-of-age films.
Although, actually, Edge of 17 is a coming-of-age film.
It is definitely a coming-of-age film, and I usually find that with a coming-of-age film, the protagonist, you know, when they finally get to the end of the film, the world is exactly the same, but they themselves have changed and transformed and are ready to go forth into that next journey of adulthood. Mm-hmm. And that's where I, you know, the character of Anne, her journey is massive in that tiny little time frame.
That's right.
And I'm full of hope for her at the end of the film to actually, you know, take on that next step of her life.
So it's a metamorphosis.
It is.
So
it is.
You know,
we have had another message from 704 saying, what Edge of 17? There was a coming of age film, Edge of 17, that came out earlier this year. That's correct. Mm. There was. And if you look up Edge of 17 online, actually the picture from this film comes up, the film that was released earlier this year.
So 2016.
That's 2016. Yep. But Edge of 17 was a film that was made by David Morton in 1998, written by Todd Stevens, who also wrote films like Another Gay Movie. Mm-hmm. So he's writing his camp. You know, it really did quite well. Mm. The New York Times says the insecurities and turbulent desires of adolescence have rarely been portrayed more faithfully on screen than in Edge of 17. So this is nearly 20 years old, but this is a fantastic film. And for our listeners, if you're not familiar with the film, it's a really good entry point into this genre because it is fun. Mm. It's also a little bit earnest. It is playful. Mm. And
you'll pick up some fashion tips.
Some of those haircuts.
And some don'ts.
Like a gold sequin singlet, you know. I loved it.
The haircuts.
You know, I could see myself, you know.
In its time, I mean, Outfest and San Francisco International Gay and Lesbian Film Festival was picking up Audience Choice Awards. Mm-hmm. So it was resonating with the audience back then. And and I think for a lot of us, it does show us a time that we remember and a bit too well.
Yeah, definitely. And of course, Eric, the main character there, is very inexperienced. So you see him in some situations that depict that being an experience, and it is funny, it is laughable, especially when he's asking his friend for the night whether or not he needs to use a condom when he's experiencing
dig yourself out of this hole.
Yes, when he really didn't need to. So that explained. Yeah. So it actually, you know, demonstrated his inexperience at the time.
And I think this film was made at a time when this genre for for queer filmmakers was burgeoning and flourishing, because this was the first time where queer filmmakers, you know, we've had queer cinema since the beginning of cinema, but I think queer cinema was at a kind of new stage in the late 90s when we had people who had grown up openly queer and were making films on the back of new queer cinema in the 80s and early 90s. And I think this was a really kind of fun time for queer cinema.
Right.
Of course, there's been a whole slew of coming of age and young love films dealing with kind of queer themes made since then. We'll be talking about them right after this.
To find out more about Joy 94.9, check out joy.org.au.
You are listening to Outtakes, the home of queer cinema on Joy 94.9, where this evening we've been travelling back in time to high school and celebrating films that deal with young love. And it's been a really, I think, divisive discussion that we've had this evening about a number of films to take us back to high school and to deal with young love. And, you know,
so
we
should be.
Yeah. One thing that we haven't turned our attention to is the way that Australia has dealt with these themes and with this genre, the way that Australian cinema has kind of delved into that world.
And I think one of the most recent films in this genre to date has been Teenage Kicks.
That's right.
Which came out in 2016.
So we've spoke with Craig Borham, the director of the film, when the film was showing. It was doing the film festival circuit. It's now available online. And it is a really kind of, I think, powerful, very contemporary and gritty Australian take. Yeah. It does have a real Australian sensibility.
Mm.
And it is a really kind of gritty Australian take on this young love genre.
And, you know, it's a bit edgy. And at times it kind of reminds me of Head On.
Yeah,
as well,
absolutely.
With this, as you say, with this coming of age, this character, the main character, is careening along on this trail of destruction, very similar to the Alex Dimitriadis character in Head On.
Yeah.
But in this film, Teenage Kicks, I think one of the things that is very remarkable in this is that we have this idea of this fluidity of sexuality that the main character was experiencing.
Which makes it feel very contemporary.
Very contemporary. I'm going, is he straight? Is he gay? What's going on?
Yep.
And it doesn't really matter. Mm. And I think this is really demonstrating the experience that our teenagers are going through today here
and
in Australia.
It's brave filmmaking, and we saw that with Downriver, the way the protagonist was portrayed in that film as well by Grant. So I think that's this kind of unique bravery we're getting out of our Australian film.
I know, and that's why when you put those films next to The First Girl I Loved...
Different story.
A different story, different kind of filmmaking. I know which one I'd pick. And, you know, that's the wonderful thing about cinema. Not everyone likes the same kind of films.
And again, to give it some credit, did win an audience award at Sundance Film Festival, First Girl I Loved. So it is out there. We do recommend audiences go see it and have interesting
I've been tough on the film, but I think it's wonderful that it's screening around the country.
Brilliant.
I think it's so important that we have this kind of representation.
And that young people are watching these
absolutely.
Films.
Absolutely. And just quickly, we can't let the moment go without like looking at a film like Holding the Man next to films like Downriver and Teenage Kicks. I think Australia is doing really wonderful things in this place, taking us back to kind of high school and exploring young love in really interesting ways. So, that said, it's been a big hour. That's it for another week of Outtakes on Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.